Now on Sports Talk, it's SC Wild with Major Billy Downer of the Department of Natural Resources. Major Downer is here to take your questions about the great outdoors in South Carolina. Give him a call at 888-898-2525. It's SC Wild from DNR on the Sports Talk Radio Network.
And it's a great time in South Carolina to talk about the great outdoors. Temperature rising and weather is really nice right now. We welcome in the Major, Billy Downer, from the Department of Natural Resources, another edition of SC Wild. Good evening, Major. How are you?
Good evening, Phil. How are you doing?
We're great.
Pleasure to be here again.
Yes, sir.
For mid-April. Yes, sir. Absolutely. We're in the midst of turkey season, as we've been talking about the last two shows, but just a couple updates for folks that may be wondering, how's our turkey season going? I just checked. And as of today, the actual statewide take of gobblers and jakes together is like 7,756, I think.
Wow.
Birds, yep, that's pretty good. I don't think that's where we've been in the past, so there's still plenty of time. You've got through the 30th here in game zones 3 and 4. And then, of course, they go through into May a little bit for the rest of the state. 1 and 2 go through May 10th. May 10th is for game zones 1 and 2. And this, where we're at in the Midlands here, 3 and 4 go through April the 30th. So still some time out there to take some birds. It's interesting everywhere you go. When you're in uniform, everybody always wants to ask questions this morning. This afternoon was no different. Had two guys working in Columbia come up to me at the restaurant in West Columbia and Casey area, and just were asking me, "Hey, well, how's the turkey season going?" Hmm. We've been having a really tough time getting a bird to come in, or even getting birds to answer us. So it's interesting. Just we talk about that until you hear us talk about it. Depends on where you are. Depends on the birds in your area. Depends on the winter before, the rainfall in the spring, all those things account for how turkey populations are doing locally. And they're just different everywhere, but it seems like I hear a common thread lately that folks feel like birds have already bred hens and are done. In other words, they're really not even interested in going to a hen. Hmm. People are seeing birds, and I'm hearing people seeing multiple 4, 5, 6 long-beard gobblers in one field and not paying any attention to you calling like a hen. And that can happen. Certainly, is that usual? No, that's pretty unusual. The late season, typically, we see birds that are more, that tend to be gobbling increases because they're looking for hens that aren't there because the hens are at the nest. But a lot of people have some frustration right now. I've talked to a few guys that have always taken a bird by now, and they haven't. So some folks are having a tough season. Others are doing quite well. Again, I've had a good experience. I had my one hunt that was quiet, but the bird came in. He didn't gobble, but he did come in to the call. And then, of course, I took a young man. I've told that story. Young man 2 weeks ago, 2 weekends ago, and he shot his first bird, and he said, "Wow, that was easy." I'm like, "Yeah, don't count on that every time."
Not that simple, is it?
It's not that simple. I put the decoys out, put the hen on the left side of us, and the semi-strut Jake, and Dave Smith decoy, right there, closer to our right, but closer to where the bird would be coming from. And in the morning when I called, that bird gobbled. He gobbled well. He was off in the distance. He came down and came running to us because he came very quickly, so he covered ground pretty quick. Jumped the barbed wire fence into a cow pasture and was coming in on us. That young man was very happy to take his first bird, but he's like, "Wow, that was easy." I'm like, "Yeah, don't count on that every time. They don't come in on a string except the Major Downer,
All right, let me ask you this real quick. And by the way, the phone number, 888-898-2525. You have a question about the remainder of the turkey hunting season in South Carolina or something else you want to discuss with the Major, maybe something with DNR, maybe something with the legislature. He is here to answer your question. What kind of or which version of your turkey calls did you use? on that particular hunt?
Of course, I continued to use the call that I received when we were on our show.
Mm-hmm.
So the one I used on the show, a gentleman let us borrow for the show, and it was a really good call. And I have to say, Mr. Tanner's call was very good. And it is from Hemingway, South Carolina. And it is a slate call.
Mm-hmm.
It's a basic slate call, what they call a pot call. It's got, you know, the slate on top of the wood. And it just really sounded really well. And it really did well. This pot's made of red cedar, but he calls it a hanging water pot because he's got strings in it and got a striker and all. But it really did well. That bird came right to it. In fact, the bird was looking for me, not even paying attention to the decoys, really.
Mm-hmm.
He was walking toward us, and at one point I thought he was going to turn around, and I had to slowly strike that call just to get a little bit of a noise. Not too much that he'd zone in on where I was, and because the young man was to my left and wanted the bird to keep going. It was enough to make him kind of go back and look at that Jake and say, huh, I'm going to go check out that young boy over here because he's not going to be strutting around my hand. So he got just a little too close. So anyway,
yeah.
It was a fun hunt. It was a fun hunt, and my nephew got his first bird. It was fun to be there for him for that. So
let me ask you this.
It's always fun to be a part of that.
Let me ask you this. I know, like, when I was gone 2 weeks ago, it was right after there had been an accident, shooting accident in a hunting situation,
yes,
a turkey hunting situation. Overall, during this turkey hunting season, how safe has it been across the state?
I hadn't heard of any other accidents. Unfortunately, the accidents that I have been a part of in my career that involve turkey hunting,
mm-hmm,
a lot of times they're very up close and they're very destructive. What baffles me and anybody when you work up these accidents is, you know, identify, we talk about it all the time, identify your target, what lies beyond it. That would mean if you see a bird, make sure when you shoot at that bird, you know your pellets are not just going to hit that bird, they're going to go on past it. Know what's beyond that bird, whether it's a cow in a cow pasture or a calf,
mm-hmm,
in a cow pasture. You don't want the farmer to cow, either to kill their cow or hit the calf or anything. You got to be thinking about that, and much less a person. And nobody pulls the trigger intending to hurt someone. In this case, it was a fatality, and it's a horrible incident to have that happen. Where someone's trying to take an animal, and they end up taking a human life.
Mm-hmm.
It's tragic. It can be an accident, but it's still tragic, and it's absolutely preventable. Identify that target. Make sure it's a turkey. I mean, I know when I shoot, I say this, and it sounds like you're being ugly, but I'm really not. Know what identifying features of a turkey look like. You know what a turkey looks like. Make sure it's a turkey. I mean, you know, I don't shoot birds so far that I don't know what they are,
yeah,
when I'm going to shoot them. And unfortunately, people make quick judgments sometimes, and that results in these type actions where they misidentify something. They look at something over a hill. I know my old boss with Hunter Ed, when I first came in, told me an accident years ago happened. A guy got killed because he simply saw a guy walking into the food plot where he was hunting. And the guy heard the turkey call, and people that don't know better sometimes will go to the call, particularly if people are using gobbler calls. And there's some gobbler calls out there that sound pretty good, whether it's the old kind of rubber call that makes the gobble sound, or somebody's really good with a mouth call. They can do it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, listen to these turkey calling contests, and you'll hear people that can make some really, really convincing sounds. But anyway, they focus on that sound, and they see a decoy, and they get so zoned in and want to kill a turkey, they don't even realize the decoy is a decoy anymore. I think it's a real thing. And they may shoot at it and shoot the person on the other side of the decoy. Or, even worse in this case, the guy put his hand up and waved at the guy to say, hey, I'm right here. And the guy shot him because he waved at him.
Oh, no.
Because he saw the movement.
Mm-hmm.
This was years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But these type of accidents are absolutely preventable. And you hate to talk about, you know, this, but it's good sometimes to bring this kind of stuff up because just, you know, make sure of your target and what lies beyond it. Identifying the features of your game, your hunting, knowing that is key to preventing these accidents, because people shooting turkey loads. These turkey loads are, I mean, it's not birdshot. It's got heavier loads in it. And at close ranges, it can be deadly. And so you just really need to be careful. When you set up for turkey hunting, I always set my birds up to the side. So I've always done that on purpose, kind of so I'm not sitting right behind that decoy if somebody were to come up or whatever. And that's it always depends on where somebody would come from. You can start making that argument. Well, Billy, how do you know they're going to come from? I don't. Mm-hmm. And remembering that you're always don't fall into the trap of thinking you're the only person hunting that property. Particularly in clubs where others have the ability to hunt, you never know who might come to that call thinking it's real. Or on private property where you're the only one supposed to be hunting. Again, people trespass. We deal with it all the time. So don't assume you're the only one. Be careful. And, you know, you don't want to discourage people from walking property, calling, walking, because that's a tactic people use, have used for years to hunt turkeys. But when you're on the move like that, and you're calling and you're listening, and that's where people get in that sense of trance kind of, I hear a bird, I'm going to it. And they forget all the rules and they make mistakes. So absolutely, I haven't heard of any more accidents, but one is too many.
Yeah.
And one death is absolutely too many. So again, I will tell you this, that there's been a lot of rumor out there on some things, and I will tell you this was not a fanning incident. In fact, it's against the law to use fans or use the act of fanning to attract a bird on our WMAs.
Now, explain what that is.
So fanning's where there are devices out there that look like a turkey fan, or either you take a real turkey fan. So the fan is the part of the turkey, the male turkey, the gobbler, that he spreads out. When he goes into full strut, those back tail feathers fan. A lot of decoys have a fake fan that looks very similar, has the image of they've got so good at printing images of feathers there. And they make fans you can hold in your hand. They make fans that you put on top of your gun and like walk behind or crawl behind, and birds focus on that fan and don't see you. A lot of states have outlawed that. Number one, because it is so dangerous because people will misidentify it. That's the main thing. But also, it's unfair to the birds. The birds will stay right there, and you can literally crawl up on a bird. So many videos I've seen on that, you just crawl up on a bird, bam, or walk up on a bird, literally, you know, kind of hunched over that fan. I've heard stories. My son had something very similar happen as far as, and he wasn't fanning, but they had some birds in a field to the left. They had a Jake in full strut decoy out in front of them. And they thought they needed to move it. They wanted to move it out. So the boy crawled out there, picked up the Jake decoy, started crawling a little bit to move it out a little bit further in the field, put it down, he's going to crawl back. As soon as he touched that decoy and began to move it, the birds came in a full gait running to basically attack that Jake because they saw it move. And they weren't even seeing him because he was kind of using it to hide himself and move up a little bit. And so – birds will get locked in on that. And fanning, like I said, is something that the industry has used some and tried to promote. We do not allow it to legal on public land. It is still legal currently on private land, but it is illegal on WMA land. Mm-hmm. Again, a lot of states have outlawed it completely because it's just so dangerous. So that's what fanning is, when you use a turkey fan to hide yourself as you're moving toward a bird. But I know we are waiting to get a caller on the line to talk about our boating bill, and I don't know when we get more get her on here or not. But let me know when Morgan gets on here.
Waiting for her to dial in, and we're going to give that a couple more minutes, or maybe Pat's going to call her, but not with us yet. If you want to go ahead and start talking about the fishing scene and also the being on the water here now that things are heating up and folks are getting out.
Well, it's getting hot. Good night, 80 degrees. People hit the water. I was in Charleston this past weekend and then riding across the bridge and just saw boat after boat coming out on the water early in the morning. Didn't matter. I was going to a softball tournament early Saturday morning, and 10 o'clock boats were just steady one behind the other coming across the bridge, across the water when I was going across the bridge. So boating season is upon us. Not even May yet, and we get warm weather again, South Carolina boats, and people are coming out in the water. You know, just a reminder to folks when we talk about boating, make sure as we talk about the first, you know, your first of the year, take that boat out. Make sure you check your safety equipment. Make sure your registration is still good. A lot of folks wait till they get out in the water to realize, oh, my registration's expired. Well, you can actually update your registration on the Go Outdoors SC app on your phone. We've talked about that app before. You can load Go Outdoors SC on your phone, and you can actually renew the registration on any current boats you have. You can't do new registrations, but you can renew old registrations as long as you have paid your taxes in the county. But anyway, it is very simple, very easy to do. Again, safety equipment. Make sure you got life jackets for everybody in the boat. Make sure that they can wear them, they fit the intended user, and they're where they can get to them in case there's an emergency if they're not going to wear them. Mm-hmm. Again, making sure they fit the intended user, because so many people, we talk about all the time, but it's worth noting, we'll put an adult life jacket on a two-year-old, and that just does not work. So that's something to consider as we go into the boating season now, making sure your lights work. It's night. It's going to be dark. Make sure your lights are on, that your red and green navigation light, your bow lights work, and that your white all-around light in the back works. Most important light in the boat, because it's visible 360 degrees. So those are some things, and a whistle on board so others can you can use that if you need to get attention for somebody if you're in an emergency. But those are the basics there. I understand we've got Morgan on the line, so
yes.
I want to welcome in Morgan Kaiser to the show tonight. Hey, Morgan, how
Hi.
Are you tonight?
Doing well. How are y'all?
It's good to have you tonight. I was going to give you an opportunity just to kind of tell us real quick about S-96, which is the boating safety bill, and kind of where it is right now in the process.
Yeah, we're really excited about it because it just passed through the full committee on the judiciary in the House of Representatives yesterday. So the next step is it's going to the floor. And if anybody is listening that's not familiar with the bill, this bill is a very slow-burning bill. It doesn't affect anybody that's currently a boat owner, but it will affect people in the future. It requires anybody born on or after July 1st, 2007, to have a mandatory boating education certificate, which in my opinion is very logical.
Absolutely. So that's going to, again, it's a born after date. It doesn't require those who are currently age of 16 or older. It doesn't affect those. It is a slow, what we call a slow roll in of a mandatory boater education because it's born after, much like hunter education was started back in the 90s. If you know, again, like she said, if you're born after July 1st, 2007, you will then be required to take boater education before you can boat in this state with a boat that is, again, 10 horsepower or greater, or a jet ski, or a specialty prop craft, any of these devices, you would have to have a boater education certificate. Again, how do you get boater education? We talk about that a lot, but just to remind folks, SCDNR puts on classrooms, classroom courses in person across the state, particularly all over the state, coming up now, May, June, July, into August on the coast, the especially in the Charleston area, we have classes every month of the year. And those classes are free. We also partner with the U.S. Coast Guard and the U.S. Power Squadron, the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary and the Power Squadron, who put on courses that they charge a minimal fee, like $30 for a family to come. And if you go to their courses, we honor that, and we give you a South Carolina Boater Education card as well for going to that course. And if a classroom course is not for you, we have the online option. The online option does cost $39.95. We don't receive any of that money. That goes to the third-party vendor who runs that course. They're in charge of keeping that course up to date. And that's their, that's why they received that money for doing that. And if that course is available, again, the minimum time on a course set by our partners at the National Association of State Boating Law Administrators is 3 hours. And that's just a standard to make sure that folks stay on pages long enough to actually read it and learn something. But that course can be done over one day, a night, over two or three nights, four nights, whatever. You can do a chapter at the time, take a break, come back the next day, save your spot, and come back. You get two opportunities to take the test, and if you fail it twice, you got to take it all over. But you do have two opportunities to take it. So that is something with, you know, worth noting. You don't take your time when you take that test online. But the classroom course, you get your card, a temporary card, immediately. If you finish the online course, they give you one that you can put on your phone. You can show officers to show that you've passed the course as well. But again, that's only going to be, if this bill passes, S-96, voter safety, that would mean that you, anyone born after July 1st, 2007, it would be required to have a boater education certificate before they get on the water with a boat, a motorized boat, 10 horsepower or greater, jet skis, specialty prop craft, et cetera. So it's good news. Morgan, tell me a minute. Just tell us for a moment, for you and your mom, what did yesterday mean to y'all?
It meant everything to us. We've been fighting for this since my dad was killed in front of me and since my mom lost her leg. It was tragic. I mean, I just think this bill is such a good idea, and it's not a difficult test to take. It's just really good to have the education. It's kind of like a driver's course. It's really good to have the education so that you're safer on the waterways and you know that everyone else that you love is safer on the waterways. Before this tragedy happened to me, I didn't ever think it could happen. I really thought I was invincible in the waterways, but now that it's happened, I just wish I would have done it sooner. I think everybody, even people that aren't going to be required to take it by this bill, if it passes, I think everyone should take it anyway. It's just really good knowledge to know.
Absolutely. And again, you know, it teaches things that are it seems like they're common sense, but people just don't know. A lot of people don't know. I've so often told people what the red and green bow lights mean. They're like, huh? I didn't know that. The red bow light is on the port or left side of your boat, because if you're going in the water and that boat's approaching you from the right, you see the red light, which tells you to stop and give way because they have the right of way because they're coming from your right. If you see the green light coming from your left, that means to go, because they're going to see your red light, meaning you have the right of way there to stop. So the red and green bow lights actually are supposed to be on one side. There's a reason why the red's on the left and green's on the right of your boat. So those are things we teach in the class. We talk about red light returning, which people get really confused about when it comes to the coast. But it's important to know, if you're operating on the intercoastal waterway or in Charleston, the harbor, what those signs mean, because they can help you avoid sandbars and things that can cause you to be stuck for a long time or even have an accident. So we encourage everyone to take a look at boater education, take a course online or in a classroom. We'd love to have you there.
You don't think about it until you're in the heat of the moment. You think you know what the rules of the waters are because you've grown up around it your whole life, but when you're in that moment and everything is falling apart in front of you, you don't think about the rules. So it's so good to have the bill so that you – or to have the education course, so that
Absolutely.
It's right there on your mind.
Absolutely. And, you know, repetition always helps you remember. And that's one of the things, the course in our classroom and online, it repeats a lot of things because that helps you remember key things like, you know, all the rules of the road. We talk about that so many times on the water. But you don't have a yellow line and a white line, so you don't know where to drive like we do in a car. You have to know, if everybody knew on the riverways to keep to the right, you could avoid head-on collisions. But people don't think about that. So it's just a lot of good information to remember, to keep in mind. And, you know, Morgan, I just want to tell you, I appreciate the dedication that you have had to this bill, to boating safety in general. You've been a real trooper. You've gone up to that state house and you've talked to lots of people. You've made them listen to you. And so I want to thank you for that. I know it means a lot. Yesterday meant a lot, and I hope that in the future this bill will be something you can look back at and say, you know, I did some good work.
You mean a lot.
Thanks, Bill. That's our boater education bill, S-96. We'll see what goes on with it, and we'll see you next time on 1st of May.
Thank you. Thank you, Major. Thank you, Morgan. Great work by both of you. You got a lot to be proud about. Thank you, Pats. Great job as always. Thank you, everybody, for being with us. Have yourselves a great night, and we'll see you tomorrow here on Sports Talk.